Hello and welcome to McLean's on the Hill. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio. U.S. President Barack Obama comes to Canada for the Three Amigos Summit and an historic speech to Parliament. On top of speaking out against protectionism, the three leaders signed a comprehensive clean energy deal. Here to talk about it is Environment Minister Catherine McKenna. Before the Three Amigos Summit, Canada and Mexico struck a quid pro quo agreement. Canada will lift visa requirements for Mexican visitors while Mexico will open its borders to Canadian beef. But conservatives are warning of the risks of striking down the visa requirements they put in place. Here to explain why is Tory MP Michelle Rempel. The Trudeau government has launched its marijuana task force in charge of studying the best way to regulate and legalize pot. The Liberals have put a former Chrétien-era cabinet minister in charge, and McClellan joins me to discuss her role in making weed legal. And finally, in honor of the Canada Day long weekend, we thought it would be interesting to bring you to the center of our country, literally. McLean's has sent a journalist to the geographic center of Canada, and you may be surprised to learn where that is. She'll join me on the phone later to discuss her journey. For your politics, for your power, welcome to the Hill.
Canadians and Americans, allies and friends, now and forever.
That was U.S. President Barack Obama giving an historic address on the floor of the House of Commons on Wednesday. It was the last official visit to Canada by Obama during his term as president. Obama discussed the close, deep relationship between Canada and the U.S. And in his introduction to the president, Prime Minister Trudeau joked about their personal relationship.
This House gets to see a bromance up close. Thanks for making that possible.
Now, the whole speech was seen as a passing of the torch as Obama praised Trudeau's work on strengthening economic ties, protecting the environment, and fighting for human rights and equality.
These are universal values, and we must be bold in their defense at home and around the world and not shy away from speaking up.
But while the president encouraged Canada to continue down the path that it's on, the speech wasn't without criticism. Obama called on our country to step up in its spending on our military and make more commitments to international missions.
The world needs more Canada. NATO needs more Canada. We need you.
Almost as if it was planned, the next day the government announced Canadian troops will be heading to Latvia to lead a NATO mission that is a part of the deterrent measures against Russian aggressions. Now, this speech was just the cap to a busy day. Obama was in Ottawa for the Three Amigos Summit with Trudeau and Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto. The three leaders signed on to an ambitious clean energy plan, and they spoke out against the protectionism that we've been seeing with the Brexit vote in the UK and the rhetoric from Donald Trump in the US.
Cooperation pays off, and that working together always beats going it alone.
They don't suddenly become a populist because they say something controversial in order to win votes. It's not the measure of populism. That's nativism or xenophobia or worse. Or it's just cynicism.
To speak more about this North American energy deal and maybe a little bit about Donald Trump, I'm joined on the phone now by Environment Minister Catherine McKenna.
Delighted to be here.
Okay, before we get on to the clean energy deal, you were in the House of Commons for Obama's speech. You sat down at the table for the meetings at the Three Amigos Summit. What was that like for you?
You know, it was so incredible. I was so honored to be there and actually just really, really proud to look at how far we've come in a really short time since being elected. We've taken a lot of serious climate action internationally. We're working hard domestically. And we're really being recognized on the world stage, including by President Obama and also the Mexican president. So it was really great and obviously very special to actually be at the table as part of the discussion on how we're going to move forward together.
So this clean energy deal, I mean, it's a wide-ranging one that touches on many different aspects of clean energy, transportation, reducing pollutants. But one of the highlights out of it is the fact that the continent has agreed to get to 50% electricity from clean power sources by 2025. Is Canada not already there with our reliance on hydro, solar, and wind?
Yeah, so it's actually a great news story. It was a big jump for Mexico. They're very committed. They're moving to 35%. They're at 18%, I think, right now, moving to 35% over the next decade. U.S., it's going to be a big effort, too. We're actually at 80%. Our goal is to hit 84%. But this is really a big economic opportunity for Canada. We already sell hydropower south. You see that Quebec, Ontario, BC are already doing that, but there are new opportunities. So a good example of how we can find solutions on a continental basis, and it can be a real economic opportunity for Canada.
So this is an average of all three countries, not each country trying to hit the 50% target.
Yeah, no, it's an average. And I think, look, this is a continental agreement. This is the way we should be approaching clean energy and climate, that borders in this case are a bit artificial in that we can find solutions. We can have transmission lines between borders. We can also, tackle climate change together, because climate change and emissions, they don't know borders. So it's a really great news story, and it's how we can all support each other to take really significant action on climate change, to do more that we could do alone, and also look at the economic opportunity. So as you saw as part of the agreement, we're going to be working forward to clean automobiles, looking at what more we can do on things like electric vehicles, also energy efficiency in appliances. And so this is really part of our integrated economy, looking at what are the real opportunities to move forward. And I'm also really excited about how we can push the envelope internationally, working as a bloc. So I'm already making phone calls to my counterparts internationally so we can get an agreement on phasing out what are called hydrofluorocarbons. They're found in refrigerants. They're much more potent than carbon dioxide, and we need to be working there. And we've agreed with Mexico and the U.S. to really make a huge effort to push this forward. You also saw the agreement on methane, where Mexico has come on board to reduce methane by 40 to 45% from oil and gas. That was a really big push for them, so I have to give them huge credit for agreeing to that. And we're looking at how we can move that forward internationally. That would be like closing one-third of the coal-fired plants if we're able to get agreement. So huge opportunities here.
On the electricity thing, does it not diminish maybe the effect if Canada is the one really picking up the slack on the average, while the U.S. may not have to really increase its clean power generation as much as it may think, because it's only down at, 13% or something?
Yeah, well, we all believe that we're stronger together. So as you know, the President Obama and his administration has worked very hard through the Clean Power Plan. They are working very hard to have clean electricity. There are political issues that make sometimes things challenging in the United States. But by doing this, they also see the opportunity of doing what we already do, which is working together. We already have an integrated economy. We have, Canadians that go across the border all the time to see family and friends, and we have integrated supply chains. So this just makes sense. And I think, what's really nice about this, beyond the climate change piece, this is just a good news story. When you see things like Brexit and you see some of the rhetoric where it's talking about building walls or, not taking positive approaches to problems, we're showing that you can do a lot more together, both to tackle climate change, but also to grow your economy and create good jobs.
On that note, though, about working together, I mean, we have an election in the U.S. Obama has agreed to this at the end of his term. Some would call it lame duck territory, but nonetheless, how do you ensure that this deal actually gets followed through on when it comes to the U.S.? What's to stop somebody like Donald Trump, if he takes the presidency, from just ripping this up?
Well, we're already working together, and we're going to continue doing that. We're working with the U.S. now on their regulations for methane as we try to, determine what would make most sense. We're going to be working hard internationally. As I said, there's a huge push. And the reality is our relationship with the U.S. and with Mexico goes beyond leaders. We already have, as I said, we already have power that's being hydropower that's going south on the eastern seaboard in the Midwest from Manitoba, and also on the West Coast. So this is going to continue. We're going to continue working really hard. And certainly right now, we're at a great point where we have three administrations totally aligned, where we're just going to keep on pushing continentally and also looking internationally to what we can be doing.
Now, when it comes to environmental standards like this, working together on regulations, trade, all these issues, it did pop up at the summit as well in a bit of a different context, but also on the issue of Donald Trump. Given his anti-trade, anti-cooperation sentiments, that seems to be growing within the U.S., as well as what we saw with Brexit. How do you as a battle, how do you as a government battle that sort of anti-trade sentiment?
So I think President Obama was the one who put it best. He said, look, trade is really good for us, and we live in a globalized economy. You can't just shut down the doors. You can't just build walls. It's not going to be possible. But there are some groups who haven't been doing as well. So we need to make sure that we're building regimes, trade regimes, that protect workers, that ensure that everyone's benefiting, that have strong environmental standards. And so that's why I think trade deals are really important, and that's certainly our perspective and why we support good trade agreements, and that's why we're working hard to make sure that they have strong environmental protections. And I think that message is resonating.
There was a question yesterday as well to Trudeau from the U.S. media about why the Canadian government doesn't speak out more against this rhetoric from the specific candidate. Why isn't Canada speaking out more against what Donald Trump is saying when it clearly clashes with the interests and views of your government?
Well, I think that it makes no sense for leaders to go intervene in the domestic politics of another country. You work with whoever is elected by the people. But I think what was expressed clearly yesterday are values. And our value is that we believe that working with Mexico, working with the U.S., we can do a lot more together. We can find solutions to climate change. We can do more on the renewable front. We can grow our economy. We can create good jobs. And we also believe that that's the way forward. It's building bridges, not building walls. And those values were very clearly expressed.
That was Environment Minister Catherine McKenna discussing the clean energy deal, which was announced at the Three Amigos Summit in Ottawa. We also spoke about the protectionism that we've been seeing with the Brexit vote in the UK and the rhetoric we've been hearing from Donald Trump in the US. Still to come on the show, a Conservative MP speaks out about the risks of lifting visa requirements for Mexican travelers. The new chair of the government's marijuana task force talks about legalizing the drug. And we head to the center of our country for the Canada Day long weekend. Welcome back to Maclean's on the Hill. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio. Coming up on the show, we discuss pot legalization with Anne McClellan, the new chair of the Marijuana Task Force, and we celebrate Canada Day by speaking with a Maclean's reporter who's traveled to the center of the country. But first, before the Three Amigos Summit began in Ottawa, Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto was in town for an official state visit to our country. He was treated to a state dinner at Rideau Hall, had the red carpet rolled out for him on Parliament Hill, and of course had a bilateral meeting with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. It was after that meeting that the two leaders came out to the foyer of the House of Commons, and the Prime Minister announced they had come to an agreement on two long-standing irritants between our countries.
On December 1st, 2016, Canada will lift the Mexican visa requirement that has restricted travel to Canada. We'll be working very closely with Mexican officials over the coming months to prepare for this change. This move will make it easier for our Mexican friends to visit Canada while growing our local economies and strengthening our communities. I'm also very happy to announce that Mexico has agreed to open their domestic market to all Canadian beef products. This is a move that will support Canadian farmers and Canadian families.
Now, the Mexican visa requirements were put in place back in 2009 by the previous Conservative government. It did so to stem the flow of asylum claims from Mexico, which had nearly tripled in the 3 years prior. When it first happened, the move angered the Mexican government, but now that the restrictions are being lifted, it's the Conservatives who are angry. McLean's writer Nikki Weird spoke on the phone with Conservative MP Michelle Rempel, who's warning of many risks.
Can you explain your stance?
Sure. There's no doubt that Canada and Mexico have an important bilateral relationship. However, there are serious concerns the government, our previous government, had with regard to the visa situation with Mexico, which is why we put the visa requirement in place in 2008. And many of those concerns I've discussed within the scope of my statements, things like the abnormally high levels of asylum claims, a large majority of which turned out to be false. There's a significant cost to processing these. If you look at the order paper question they posted online, in 2008 alone, I think the cost of processing and removing people who were ineligible, it was over $250 million. There are security concerns with regard to the integrity of the Mexican passport issuance system that can't be overlooked. Border controls, etc. These are all of the things that we look at, a country looks at in a very, this is not a political decision. This is a very judicious, evidence-based process. And we put that visa requirement in place not lightly, right? Because obviously there are trade implications. But for the government just to sort of forego the formal process to lift a requirement, and that process has been in place. It's in place to ensure that you're working with a country on a sort of a progress-oriented way to ensure that there are checks and balances and processes in place to correct the problems that we saw. For that not to have been undertaken and for the government to make a political decision about the visa requirement, I think would set very bad precedent. I think that there's a big chance that the government will have to reverse their decision, which will have trade implications in the future. So rather than looking at working with the government over time to put in place a process to see that corrected, unilaterally lifting it, I think, was a bad decision. And then there's other countries that would like to see their visa requirements lifted. And now the Prime Minister is going to have a difficult time saying to them, well, we have a formal process that you go through, you have to meet these different standards, et cetera, because he's made an exemption, a rather large one. So I think for all of those reasons, this was a very short-sighted decision, and I think the Prime Minister would have had the will of the country to take a more measured approach, and he chose not to.
So you don't think that as of December 1st, those restrictions will actually be lifted?
Well, I think that he said that they will. My position is that I don't think that we don't see any proof as a country that there's been any progress that's been made by the Mexican government on issuing or on changing some of the situations that led to the visa requirement being put in place to begin with. And we see that because we've had department officials, so these are, our neutral public service, in front of committee. They've had leaked reports as well, saying that they have serious concerns about the Mexican government's ability to correct some of these problems. So, the Prime Minister has announced that he is going to lift this requirement. The question is now, will we see any change from what we had in 2008? And that's really where the rubber hits the road on this one. The onus is both on the Mexican government to immediately correct some of these issues, but now the Canadian government's in a difficult position because what happens if they don't? Are we actually going to reverse this position? I'm not sure. So this is a very bad and short-sighted decision to have lifted it this quickly without those checks and balances in place.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the benefits that kind of came out of this was Mexico lifting the ban on Canadian beef. You are a representative of Alberta. Do you think it would have been possible to negotiate that deal without lifting these requirements?
Well, I don't look at policy issues as mutually exclusive, right? Mm-hmm. The reality is that the government has an onus both to ensure that we have openness of borders to trade products, but also to ensure the integrity of our immigration system, right? So we shouldn't be trading one off for the other. Certainly, you know, I'm a proponent of free trade. I think free trade is very important. I think, you know, we have many exports that the Mexican market is an excellent trade opportunity for us. But that said, the cost of the Canadian system of processing asylum claims that are, you know, ineligible and false, very high. And, you know, I've heard numbers thrown out by the government, like, well, you know, if there's only 3,500 or something, you know, I'm not quite sure what the figure was off the top of my head, but they have sort of said in media that, well, you know, if we see this many fake asylum claims, then, you know, we're kind of okay with that. Well, there's a huge cost to the Canadian taxpayer to dealing with false asylum claims that the government has not costed at all. And moreover, I have been asking a committee and order paper questions the Minister in the House about the integrity of the Mexican passport issuing system. The fact that we have not had any assurances that that situation has improved, I think that's a big security concern for the country as well. So, you know, to me, I just, in Canada, we negotiate the best solution for our country writ large, and we shouldn't be in a position where we're putting ourselves in, you know, in a situation where it's detrimental to the country in one particular area. And I think that's what they've done here. You know, I think that they had the opportunity to work with the Mexican government on a concrete roadmap. I know that that's the best situation that you want to see in a situation like this, and there is nothing that has been done in that regard. So they're just really opening the doors again without correcting any of these issues, and that's a problem.
That was Conservative MP Michelle Rempel speaking with Maclean's writer Nikki Weert about why she opposes the decision from the Trudeau government to lift visa requirements for Mexican travelers. Still to come, the new chair of the government's marijuana task force tells us what's on the table as her group of experts study the best way to legalize pot. And we're joined by a Maclean's reporter who's celebrating the Canada Day long weekend in the geographic center of our country. Welcome back to Maclean's on the Hill. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio. Still to come on the show, how would you like to celebrate the Canada Day-long weekend in the geographic center of our country? That's what one Maclean's reporter is doing. But first, the Trudeau government has taken the next step in its plan to legalize pot. On Thursday, the Justice and Health Ministers held a news conference to officially launch their marijuana task force. It has the responsibility of studying the best ways to legalize and regulate the drug. After a series of consultations over the summer and fall, this group of experts will have to prepare a report for the government, which will be made public in November. The Liberals will use the suggestions in this report to craft their legalization legislation, which it's promised to introduce in the House of Commons in the spring of next year. This is a whole complex project for this task force, and to lead the charge, the government has turned to former politician Anne McClellan. McClellan began her political career in 1993 as an MP in the Chrétien government. Over her 13 years in federal politics, she served a variety of roles, including Minister of Health, Minister of Justice, and Minister of Public Safety, the very three departments that are in charge of legalization. Anne McClellan now joins me on the phone to speak about her new job. Ms. McClellan, thank you very much for joining us on the show.
My pleasure.
I guess first off, during your time in politics, you were open to decriminalization of marijuana, but you did call it a very dangerous subject. Now you're one of the people who's in charge of the efforts to legalize marijuana. What's changed for you since your time in politics?
Well, I think that we've all learned a lot over the past 10 years, or actually even longer. And I think that we have come to the conclusion that the current situation isn't working and we need to find a better way. And I think that conclusion is based on a lot of evidence, research, and experiential examples over this past decade or so in terms of why what we've got presently doesn't work and why we need to move toward legalization as the best course, and legalization obviously with a regulatory regime.
So what exactly will your task force be studying when you're looking at this legalization regulatory regime?
Well, we're going to be looking at the implications of legalization. The way I like to look at it is the how. We are going to legalize. So the issue for the task force is how do we do that in the best interests of all Canadians? And we will be looking at past experience in this country. We will be looking, for example, to our neighbors to the south. There's been a lot of publicity around what's been happening in the states of Colorado and Washington. Yes, it's early days for them, but I think there are things that we can learn. We'll be bringing together and looking at, learning from, and analyzing as much information and material as we can find. And when you look at the task force as well, people with diverse interests but expertise in a number of different areas that are relevant here, we're going to put that all together, and we are going to come up with the best recommendations possible for this government and for the country in terms of what legalization with a regulatory regime would look like.
Will you be considering a possible federal age for the consumption of marijuana? Normally a provincial responsibility, but is that something you may look at?
I think it's fair to say that the task force is going to be looking at a wide range of issues and questions. And the question you've just put is one of those. And I would suggest to everyone who's listening to your show that we have a discussion paper online. It went up today. And that discussion paper asks a series of focused questions in terms of seeking Canadians' opinions as to what they think the approach should be to a wide range of questions, including age. So I'm not going to prejudge the outcome of the task force deliberations or what we hear from Canadians or experts in the field. But the discussion paper does list a number of discrete, focused questions that will lead the task force to drill down on some of those key matters.
What about pricing controls? You mentioned talking to other jurisdictions like Colorado. We actually on our show have had the so-called Colorado pot czar, and he had some suggestions about the issue of pricing controls. He had a lot of advice to give, actually, but he said that was one of the biggest issues they faced in trying to deal with organized crime. Because you don't want the black market to still thrive if you're charging too much. Will you be recommending anything on pricing controls?
Again, I think it's fair to say that those are the kinds of issues that we will be looking at, and that we will take the opportunity to learn from other jurisdictions like Colorado. We know already that there are lessons that the administrators of the program in the state of Colorado have learned. And the officials supporting our task force tell us that they are more than willing to share their lessons learned with us. And issues around pricing, again, one of the questions that is important and is set out as a question in our discussion paper. And one of the issues, again, that we are going to be looking for the best advice and information on. But I keep coming back to the fact, way too soon for us as a task force to be making any definitive statements on anything at this point, because we are at the very beginning of this process. And we have our discussion paper out there, and we have the questions that we would like Canadians to focus on in terms of helping us get their views on how they feel about how we should implement legalization and what kind of regulatory regime we should have. And, of course, keep in mind that we as a task force will be talking to the provinces and talking to the municipalities. And they have a big interest here, and we will want to hear what they have to say on key questions such as the ones you've just identified.
How delicate will that process be with when it comes to jurisdictions? Because let's say alcohol, the provinces generally control that and not the federal government. So do you have to have that proper balancing act?
I think it is very much a question of balance, and we as a task force very much want to engage with the provinces, the territories, and municipalities, and I think the task force understands the very clear and important interests that other levels of government have in this question, and certainly I have no doubt that Bill Blair, who's Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister of Justice, and the ministers themselves will be carrying out consultations with the provinces and municipalities. And we at the task force will be doing the same thing.
The makeup of your task force, you have people in the healthcare field, you have people in law enforcement, but you don't have anybody from the industry specific to marijuana, and you have no pot advocates who are a part of this task force. Why is that?
Well, I'm not sure I would leap, as definitively as you have said, in terms of where people's particular research interests, for example, might lie. I guess what I would say is that as we have identified key constituencies with whom we will be meeting, and as was mentioned today at the press conference, one of those constituencies would be the legal producers, and certainly we would want to talk to them about their experiences, insights and views they would have on production, distribution, and so on. And I think it's going to be very possible for us to get the kinds of firsthand information we need when we conduct our roundtables and meet with interests such as those.
With the assisted dying legislation, we saw a committee come forward with a number of recommendations, a large report, but a lot of the key factors of that report seem to be left out of the government's final legislation. Do you fear that some of the recommendations you may put forward may not end up in the legislation from the government?
At the end of the day, it is up to the government to decide the exact outline and details of a regulatory regime going forward, what that would look like, the how. But I think the task force, we will do the best job that we can in terms of listening, learning, analyzing, trying to help the government avoid unintended consequences. And we will do that. And at the end of the day, it is up to the Government of Canada to decide whether they take all our recommendations, whether they take some of them, and so on. But I can assure you that this task force is going to be focused on doing the very best that we can in terms of helping the government understand how we think they can implement the commitment to legalization and regulation.
Ms. McClellan, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
That was Anne McClellan, who's been named the chair of the Trudeau government's Marijuana Task Force. Coming up after the break, what better place to celebrate the Canada Day long weekend than the center of our country? We'll let you know where that is and speak with the McLean's reporter who traveled there to plant a flag and fish with some Mounties. Welcome back to McLean's on the Hill. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio. It's the Canada Day long weekend, and our nation is 149 years old. To celebrate that, McLean's magazine decided to send a reporter to the geographic center of our country. You may actually be surprised where that spot is. Because there's no cell reception there, I actually had to interview Megan Campbell the day before Canada Day, just before she arrived at her destination. Okay, so you are traveling to the center of Canada. Where exactly is that?
62.3 degrees north, 97 degrees west. So that puts us in Nunavut, about 275 kilometers southwest of a community called Baker Lake. And visually, it's going to be about, it's going to be around a vast tundra. There might be a few trees. We might be near a tree line. It's also on the caribou migration route, and it's near a few different lakes. One is called Yathked Lake, which is a major lake, which will probably still be quite full of ice. And then a smaller lake nearby is called Ferguson Lake, and we'll probably be setting up our tents around there.
I think a lot of Canadians may be surprised to find that the geographical center of our country is so far north, considering, you know, you look at many of our cities being close to the border on the south end. Some would think maybe the northern parts of the provinces, but definitely not in the territories. Were you surprised to learn where this was?
Yeah, I definitely was. And so how it started was last year we looked into where the exact geographical center would be in terms of longitude and latitude. The halfway point across the Trans-Canada Highway is in a community called Taché, Manitoba, where the videographer and myself actually stopped a few days ago. They have a big sign there marking the longitudinal center, and since we were wondering where the center in terms of latitude as well would be, that brought us to Baker Lake. This is the closest community to that center, but based on the opinion of the president of the Canadian Cartographic Association, using the Atlas of Canada, we have determined these coordinates are actually a bush plane ride away from Baker Lake. And throughout our journey, we also stopped in Ottawa, and speaking to people there on Parliament Hill who were just visiting, when we asked, where do you think the center of Canada would be, many said Winnipeg, Manitoba, and so that was definitely the perception, is that Canada doesn't go, or I guess Canada goes much further north than people realize.
What is the weather like up there? You know, it's going to be roasting hot for a lot of people across the country in the southern areas, but up in Nunavut, what is it like up there?
Well, surprisingly, here in Baker Lake, it's been about 20 degrees, quite sunny, and people are actually complaining about the heat because they're, I guess, not used to this. It also means the mosquitoes are quite ferocious, just, you know, swarms. But when we actually get to the geographic center, the weather we were predicting, or we are predicting, is probably around 10 or 12 degrees at night, getting cooler, and there is also a chance of thunderstorms and such. We're hoping that there's no storm that makes it a no-fly day on the day that we're hoping to come back, meaning July 2nd, because otherwise we could be stuck there for another few nights. But we have two local guides with us who actually are Inuit themselves, grew up on the land outside of any community at all. Actually, they're brother and sister, and before they moved to Baker Lake, they lived solely with their family out on the land before moving as teenagers.
So yeah. Why did you want to make this trip on the Canada Day long weekend to be at the geographical center on the day we celebrate our 149th birthday?
Well, I think it's sort of the perfect iconic Canadian place to celebrate Canada Day. And we've actually brought all types of Canadiana with us. So we've brought Tim Hortons, and we've brought coolers and obviously tents and fishing rods and plaid jackets and denim and Hudson Bay flyers and The most recent addition to this project is we are actually going to have two mounted police in red dress uniform on the site with us to plant the flag at the center of Canada on Canada Day. So that's going to be quite an iconic moment as well.
That's amazing. You're going to have the RCMP yeah. there with you.
Yeah, so two out of Baker Lake's four RCMP officers are excited to be coming with us. And when they heard that it was near a lake, they figured they want to bring their fishing rods and do some fishing while in their red dress. So I'm very excited to capture that.
The photos will be amazing. What does that mean for you? I mean, personally, you're going to be at the center of our country with Mounties in Red Surge and all that Canadiana that you've brought with you. What does it mean for you?
I guess I've been thinking about what this project means, and it's, I think, symbolic that we got there only based on the help of Canadians. So the project is neither about the geography of Canada alone nor the people or culture of Canada alone, but it's this kind of perfect mixture because we are traveling to this, you know, iconic Canadian landscape site where we're going to be in the tundra, in the Arctic. There will be the risk of grizzly bears, where our guides are actually bringing a dog along to warn us if it does see a bear. But at the same time as the geography is going to be relevant, the people are really what made this happen, because the trip would have been absolutely prohibitively expensive, but over the past year, I've been in contact with both a Northern airline who got us from Winnipeg to Baker Lake, Calm Air, and then also this bush pilot named Boris Katelowitz in Baker Lake, and he has agreed extremely graciously to fly us from Baker Lake to these coordinates at no cost, because he feels that this is going to reignite the Canadian spirit, and he says that Canada needs it.
So, Megan, you're also going to be leaving some souvenirs while you're there. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so throughout the journey, we collected a series of symbolic Canadian items that we are going to leave in a geocache, which is a sort of like a treasure trove that is part of a international community of geocachers. These things are all over the world. You can find them, and there's a whole community of people who use their GPS devices and go around finding and planting and sharing geocaches. We are going to include inside a small canister, which we'll leave at the exact site, a small pebble from the lawns of Parliament Hill, which we collected while we were at in Ottawa. We also have included a small canister of, or a small bottle of water from the fountain surrounding the Centennial Flame. We have also included a note to Canadians, or we're not sure exactly what it's going to be yet, but some sort of mosaic or collection of words or quotes from the trip. Also a small baggie of dirt, a famous Manitoban mud from the Longitudinal Center in Taché. And finally, there will be a key. So if anybody finds themselves at the Geographic Center of Canada, 62.3 degrees north, 97 degrees west, they will find a little golden key, and it belongs to a lock that we have locked on the Locks Bridge over the Rideau Canal.
That was Megan Campbell, who's reporting from Maclean's from the geographic center of our country, which is just outside a lake community in Nunavut. Check out Megan's videos of her journey on Maclean's.ca. Well, that's it for this week's episode. And for more of your politics and power, join us next week on The Hill.